That's not on there, is it?
It's on now, so I...
Yeah, they came down here on the Waterman stage. See, I went to Oxford.
Yeah.
Evacuated with the children. Didn't stay very long. I stayed a month, I think.
Yes.
And
so you know Oxford, do you then?
So, well, not a lot of it, but I was there for a month, you know.
I see. Are you?
And I came back to London again, and then the council, London County Council, sent me, asked me if I would go with the children into one of the nurseries. Well, they were opening up all over the place, and I went to Loosley Row. Mm. Don't know if this is interesting.
It is, yeah.
I went to Loosley Row to a large house there, and the crowd of children and the children, poor kids, they were all dirty and somewhere all sores. All they were in a terrible state, was hanging about so long, you see, for the evacuation, and their parcels done up and that sort of thing. The poor kids were in a pretty bad state, or a lot of them were. They were there, the crowd that were there, anyhow. Anyhow, they had doctors and all that on the scene. They soon got all right and cleaned up. And I was there for about 6 months, I think, and then they moved us again, and we went to Stenin, Lady Howard's house. And, do you know it at all?
Lady Howard, I know very well. I mean, I know her. She's a well-known person.
Is she?
Yes, oh,
yeah. Her husband was the Honourable Arthur at her house, wasn't he?
Yes, that's right.
And we were there, I think... from the Easter time until just before Christmas. Mm. And they wanted the council to do so much, alterations and that sort of thing. The council wouldn't pay out, so then I went to Glanbourne for a month. Mm. Then they shifted us again. My sister was with me, the only one who died. Mm. And we went to Stevenage.
Mm.
And I was at Stevenage, I think, about 18 months or 2 years. And then from there, they wanted to cook very badly at Amersham. So I went to Amersham then, I stayed till the end of the war.
You were a cook, were you then?
I was a cook, yes.
I see, yes.
And I wasn't really, but I just took it on, I got pushed into it, and that was that. I wasn't a cook, really. But it seemed to suit everywhere I went, and from there I went on to... I came back, and I spent a month in a little tiny school in Brentwood. You know Brentwood in Essex. Yes. And then that finished it. Well, then after that, they wrote and asked me, would I go up to County Hall and see them for an interview, and would I go to Marsford Lodge, a girls' remand home.
Yeah. As a cook again?
Yes, but then I went to Marsford Lodge, and there was some carryings on there, I can tell you, I had some laughs too, but the riots, you'd never think the girls could do so much. So much damage that they did. They broke beds, did fireplaces, when they got on that mood, you know, and there was a riot there. There was two or three when I was there. And one dinner time, of course they were well fed and well looked after. I mean, they had things that the kids outside couldn't get. And they came, is this all right?
Yeah, fine.
And they came, a couple of the girls came in to ask one or two of the other girls, they said, come on, we're going out. And off they went, they all rushed out. They couldn't get out of the place because it was locked, but they climbed up a great high wall, sat on the wall and defied the police, the firemen and goodness knows who. And they're up for about 4 hours and the traffic was all up on King Street, Hammersmith.
Good.
Held up, you know, to get these girls. And one of the firemen said they'd soon get them down, but they wouldn't be allowed to. They put the hose on them, but they didn't dare do it. They weren't allowed to. So finally it all ended, but all they did some damage there.
How long did you stay doing that then?
Oh, I was there. Not at Marsford Lodge. Now the council very quickly, well, they had orders from the government that the government wouldn't pay out any more if they had any more of these rights. Well, they couldn't help it. No one could stop it.
Mm.
And only young girls under 16, and they moved them down to Goldhawk Road.
Oh, yeah.
To the...
near Hammersmith, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know, I forget it.
Yeah.
Stanford House, remand home.
Yeah.
For the boys. Of course, the girls loved that, but they didn't get a chance to mix with them much.
And, so you went with them, did you?
I went with them, yes, at that time. And I stayed there till the... Well, till I retired. It was I retired at 65. Well, I'm at 88 now. Yeah, so you can make that up quick.
So you've been retired here ever since, have you?
And then I came down here, yes, when I retired, but I was up in the Goldhawk Road for, I suppose, must have been about 6 years or more.
I see, and then you came
and
down
And I liked the work there, you know, and you got on all right. The boys were quite nice, some of them, really.
You've got to have a sense of humour, haven't you?
There was one morning in particular, a couple of boys got away, they walked down to out the gate, down a long path, you know, pathway, and coming up was the superintendent, Captain Handy. And they said, good morning, so he said, good morning, boys. And the boys killed off. He felt like a timber, they call it, when they leave. When
absconded.
Absconded, yeah. Yes, that's it. Yeah. And they didn't realise they were absconding, and they had a good laugh, but they soon picked them up again. But the boys were nowhere near the trouble that the girls had been.
Yeah, nothing, well, girls can be really difficult, can't they?
Yeah, when they are, I'll tell you.
But what did you start off as, Miss Lagson? Did you start off as a cook then? What?
No, I just sort of fell in it. When we got to Lucy Row, that was on the Aylesbury Way, you know.
Let's start at the beginning. Tell me about your school first. Where and your parents? Who were your parents? Because Lagston's an unusual name, isn't it?
Oh, my mother and father, they were easygoing. My dad was a labour man all his life. That's where we got it from him, really. But we were allowed, you know, just to do practically as we liked. We had no interference, really, except just my father's an atheist. He'd read the Bible through, right through, and studied it, and he had no beliefs at all that way. So he wouldn't have the children christened or anything. He wouldn't let my mother take them to church. It's the only time he interfered. But she was easygoing. She just let us, we wanted to get out, and we went out. And I suppose she was a proper old slave in a way. She did all the needlework, and I was no needlewoman, but she did. She made our clothes, and my father, another thing, was never out of work. He was also, we didn't experience their poverty. That was about at that time, because we didn't have much, but I mean, we had enough. And we were pretty well dressed. My mother made our things. Some of them were second hand. She turned into clothes for us, you know, and machined and that. And I could never work a machine, because she really made a fool of us, because she never showed us on trouble. She got on with it. And then when I was 14, I went out to work. And
What was your father? What did he do for a living, your father?
All was on bridges, bridge work mostly.
He's a builder, was he, really?
Not really.
Or engineer, or?
Riveter on bridges, you know, mostly bridge work.
Good job.
And all was regular. He fell out of work one day, he got a job the next, you know.
Yeah.
I suppose you'd call him a bridge builder, really, but he wasn't in the building line, not bricklaying, nothing of that. But
where did you live?
I know
then?
He must have done riveting because I know he woke up in the middle of the night once and woke my mother up and said to her, I don't remember doing certain rivets or something. He got up early and went up to the city, to one of the stations, and to see that on the bridge, you know, going across, whether he'd, because he had done it, but I suppose it was that to feed him, but he hadn't, and when he got up there, he'd had all his money for nothing.
He was very conscientious, was he?
Oh, yes, he was. He was a good workman. And, of course, the boys, I mean, they just went out when they were 14, the same as the rest of us. And
where did you go to school, Miss Lagson, then?
I went to school in Potley, ordinary. I started in the London School Board, you know, and then they changed over afterwards to the London County Council.
Yeah.
And I went away into domestic service. I was always
shy.
When
you left school, you mean?
After I left school.
Yes.
I was always shy, you know, on the shy side. Didn't like to go mixing with a lot of people. And I went to service. I went in local, first of all. I soon cleared off there, because the couple I worked for, both of them used to go on the booze now and again. And very nice people, though. Well, she was a very nice woman, but they liked to drop. He was a superintendent, well, I shouldn't be saying this, I suppose, superintendent for the Prudential Company.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, it's so many years ago, they're all dead.
Yeah, don't worry. Anyway, I shan't show this to anybody, so don't worry.
And my voice sounds shocking.
No, it's fine, you're doing fine.
And they used to go on the tiddly, and she used to get me to go out with a joke. And I used to wear the cape, and with a jug under my arm, under the cape, so nobody saw it. It was a big house, but they were very decent to me. I mean, I've got no complaints about them. And then from there, I went to the West End, to Curzon Street Mayfair, Major Arthur Griffiths in Curzon Street, and his wife.
Well, as a general servant, were you?
I was upstairs, downstairs there. I was upstairs in the morning, downstairs the cook, in the evening, the cook.
I see.
The evening. And I remember once the cook was ill and they asked me to do the dinner. Well, I was scared stiff and I had to fry whitebait. I didn't know, they looked like tiddlers to me, you know. The kids come home on Sunday afternoon when they'd been down fishing in the canal in a glass jar with string. And I came home with, I got these whitebait and I put them in, and anyhow, the message came down from the dining room congratulating me on the dinner. And I was only 15. Mm. I told them when I went there that I was 16 going on for 17. Well, the old lady, Mrs. Griffiths, she told the cook, she said, she seems to nice little thing, she said, she says she's 16 going on for 17. She said, my idea is she's 15 going on for 16. Well, she was right, I was only 15. And I think I was there about a year, and then they packed up and went abroad and put their furniture. Now, they went to a flat first at Victoria. I forget the name of the flat now, some big mansion's there. And
but you didn't go with them then?
I went there, only for a few months before they only went there for the time being. Yeah. They'd stored most of their furniture, it was a furnished flat there. Yeah. And then she asked me, she said her niece wanted a maid, and would I think about it? So of course I was only too glad, I didn't like to go to other jobs. So I went there and I stayed there, I think I was there for 3 years. Mrs. Marshall, Mr. and Mrs. Marshall, then she wrote to me once afterwards and told me that her husband had been killed in the First World War, but he was a nice man. He was the eldest son of Marshall Snellgrove.
Oh,
was
he?
And he was the eldest son. And his father did, but he was, because he used to go up to London every day to the firm, but they were quite comfortable. Mm. And she was a marvellous pianist, she used to play beautifully.
What did you do for them then? Were you still an ordinary servant?
Only me there. It was a small flat, it only had four rooms in London. Mm. When they moved to Watford, and that was just an ordinary working man's house, six rooms. Mm. And I did it all and did the cooking. I took the cooking out on
my own. Oh, you took the cooking then, did you?
Yeah, I did the cooking. I never had any washing anywhere to do, wherever I went, and I never had any flights of stone steps like there were to do. I was pretty lucky, really. Mm. And because I liked it there, and Mr. Marshall himself, he was really a nice chap, you know, it seems such a shame. Mm. And anyhow, they had a baby there when they were there, and that died at birth. Mm. Then after I left them, I had a letter from him to say that Mrs. Marshall was going to have another baby, and would I go there, back again, and to relieve her of any worry. But by then I got the job I wanted, so because I didn't go.
What was your job then?
That was in the cookery centre. Mm. I didn't do any cooking there, only when the teacher was away ill or anything, or stayed out, I'd cook the children's dinners, you know, like the necessitous dinners, as they used to be called. Mm. When she was off duty, I took it on.
Where was that, Miss Lexington?
That was at Ricardo Street School in Poplar.
Oh, I see. You went back to Poplar then?
I came back home, yes. Family.
Yeah.
And
you stayed there?
Well, I stayed there right till the war.
Till the First War or the Second War?
Oh, to the First War. I didn't stay there all the time. Very stupidly, I left my job. But Sylvia Pankhurst, I'd met her by that time.
Yes.
And she, I think it was about beginning of 1912, or the end of 1911. Mm. I've met her, and walking down the foot, you'll see all that in there, really. So
carry on, though. I mean, I'm interested in this.
There was a big meeting. Mm. She was speaking. She'd rented a room in East India Dock Road, right facing the dock wall. And the dock gates in East India Dock Road. You know that at all?
Yeah, I know the rough area. I'm just because your feet are in the. That's better.
If you went to East Ham, I suppose you'd pass up that way. Yeah. By train, I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, there was quite a few people outside the Ravens. It was a large house near Poplar Hospital that was there then, and had a basement there, the first floor. But she'd rented a couple of rooms there. And had a lot of meetings in there, and she was speaking from the window and asking the people to come in and join her and all that, as she used to speak. So my friend and I, we stood outside listening for a while. Then she invited them in, come in, you know. So I said, come in, what she's got to say. So we walked in, and in the evening it was. And then after a bit of a talk and that, we said we'd join. So we both joined up in the party, or with her. And of course, then it used to be nearly every week we'd meet somewhere or other and go to some of our meetings over.
That was the East London Federation, I suppose.
That was the, it hadn't got its name then. It was
just part of WSPU. Sort of,
but you'll get a lot of that in there, yes. In that book. That's where she came.
Yes.
And then they got this one in Old Ford, this large house in Old Ford Road. And that was big, it had a hall attached to it, where they could have big meetings, and another hall where they had a staff, a typist and that sort of thing went on, you know, the clerical work. And Miss Smythe, Nora Smythe, she was a very wealthy woman, and aristocratic she was, you only had to look at her to tell what she was. And she supplied Sylvia with a, in fact, I think Sylvia practically ruined her, really. In the end, because Smythe spent all her money, and a chap told me, one of the fellows there, he said that Sylvia told him that Miss Smythe had done what nobody else would ever do. She sold all her bonds and whatever it was that where she drew her money from, and left herself with nothing. And Sylvia said not many people would do that, because as the time went on, Sylvia got more hard up.
Yeah.
When she came, she was smart and used to look very nice, and she gradually got, you know, that she... I suppose she didn't trouble herself, it was all... And then she started the book, the Dreadnoughts. Mm. And first of all, it said that she started saying the meeting, she had us all a crowd over there in the hall, what should they call it? And it was first this, and then it was that, and then the other. It got to the East London Federation of Suffragettes. And that suited them all right, they had that. And then later on, I forget when the time and the dates and the year, when she started the Dreadnoughts,
mm.
And she was asking, you know, all the people what to call it, what they do, this and that and now. And then in the end, it was the Women's Dreadnought.
Mm.
I believe at the end it started the Workers' Dreadnought. I'm not sure that's about right, that, but I think it did, before the finishing up. And anyhow, at the end of, the beginning, end of 1930, when the year the war started, 1914, we'd been going to quite a lot of meetings and demonstrations and that, and she asked me if I would, she started this restaurant, Cost Price Restaurant it was called. I forget how much they charged for dinners, I know it was a very small rate, and she said, would I go? Well, I didn't want to go really, because I was quite settled in my cookery job and the council, you know, and it was just before Christmas. And my father said, well, why don't you go? He said, you keep messing about with a woman, why don't you tell her what you're going to do one way or the other? So eventually I said, well, all right, I'll leave. Well, I was getting about 14 or 15 shillings a week. Well, that was a good wage at that time too, really, on the council. Well, they offered me £1. That was a bit of an attraction, 4 or 5 shillings a week extra. So I went, but it wasn't much of a job. I mean, it was... doing these, and we got vegetables and things like that, but you couldn't get meat. You see, the guards wouldn't give up any coupons, any food coupons, naturally. And they came in, and it was mostly offal that we had. We had to, I don't know what it was, it was called offal, I know that. And we used to mince it up and make pies and puddings and things like that, you know, and stews. But it was all right at that time, and they liked it. Of course, we got jam. We managed to get, at times, large pots of jam. They used to get one, and the other used to bring it in. And the other few workers, there weren't many working there, and I had quite a youngster, only about 15, with me in the kitchen, and then they were all a good crowd together, you know, that worked there. And they'd say, here, there's potatoes up so-and-so, and they'd go out and get a big sack of potatoes, £60, you know, £50 more, bring them along on a barrow and all that sort of thing. It was hectic, really. But they all fell in, and the girls used to like the dinners. I wouldn't have liked them myself much, but it was just...
What were they? They were free dinners, were they?
No, they paid about sixpence or fourpence, I think, for the dinner. Well, they had a two-course, then they had a cup of tea afterwards. I suppose that was about 8p. Of course, 8 was 8 in them days. It wasn't like what we've got now. And that went on then, I think, I forget how long it was. Oh, all through the war.
Where was that, Miss Lexington?
In Railway Street.
In Poplar?
Railway Street in Poplar.
Mm.
And it was an old-fashioned little pub. There was a one big room, and it had been two bars, and the other long room where the, I suppose, the men used to go in and smoke in the times when they, when it was a pub, when it was used as a pub. I think it was empty for years. But it had a lovely little mahogany, about as big as that, bar where they used to, I suppose, keep the some of the best drinks and that, you know, with that, well, I suppose it's the bar where they went up and paid. I don't know, but I forget that. But anyhow, it was a beautiful piece of work, you know, really was. And then there was this big long room with an old-fashioned stove in it. And we used to use it for an office. Well, Soviet had an organiser there. It was used as an office. And then upstairs, there were three small rooms. There was the doctor's room and the nurse's room when she opened up a clinic there.
Did she? And, she that was still in the war, first war.
In the war, yes, with these dinners down below. And then there was a nurse used to come in. She used to come every day. The doctor used to come in about twice a week and examine the children. The mothers used to come and sit out in this big place that had been a couple of bars, you know, where they had drinks. And they looked after the children there. They examined them and they had all that going on. And, of course, weekends that was closed. Well, then weekends we used to go out, take a box and get down to the docks over Mill Wall and stand outside taking the box, one of baby's milk. And there was one man, every week he gave 5 shillings.
Yeah.
And I don't remember whether it went in for the milk, baby's milk, or whether it went in for the rest. I think it went in for the baby's milk. I want a dreadnought he used to buy. I used to have the dreadnoughts hanging over my arm, and he used to always buy one or two dreadnoughts and gave us 5 shillings. And got quite a bit that way, collecting, you know, for milk. And of course, we weren't the only ones. They were around, others were around other parts, and I don't know what they did in the other boroughs, but that's what they did in the Poplar Borough.
So it was really a sort of welfare centre, really, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Medical treatment, got, that's what it got to be, yes.
What else did she do for them?
Then we had meetings there.
Oh, yes.
And she used to come and speak, you know, because they weren't big meetings. It didn't hold a lot, but she used to come down and speak to them and talk to them and that. And after that, then it went on all through the war. And I was working there until... Oh, while we were there, I had a party one night on the birthday, the 8th of September, and one of the chaps, and he was in the army, there was quite a few fellows there, some of them were conscientious objectors, and Arthur had been, he was home on leave from the war, he'd been out of the front.
That's your and brother, all, is it?
No, that's a friend.
Oh, yeah.
And we, some weird noise, you know, and we heard the air raid warnings, so they used to, I forget what they did, nothing, they used to come down the streets calling out. We never had anything like this, not
no
the sirens, never had those things. And I said to him, what are you looking at? He stood on the door, what are you looking at? He said, get inside. I said, what are you looking at? And I looked out the door, and this great beautiful thing, like a great silver cigar, and it was very low, well it was low, it was because we could see it so plain, and it was like a silver thing sailing along quite calmly. And it was brought down, where was it brought down now? Cuffley, I think it was Cuffley, I believe. Anyhow, it was brought down, you know, and all in flames, shocking thing, but it was a beautiful sight. And of course, all our lot looked mad. They were saying, oh, come down the cellar, and up the old trap door was open. It wouldn't have held us, let alone helped us, it kept a bomb out, but it was a proper old show. And anyhow, we got over there, and we got through the war, and... And then there was another air raid. When the planes came over the first Wednesday, and I had two sisters in the school, in North Street School, and they came over the docks, and we heard this noise, and I went out and saw these little sparkling things in the sky, and I said to the sister, the nurse, I said, what is it? Oh, she said, they're German planes, they're planes, she said. And then, of course, we heard a bang, and then somebody came by and they shouted out, North Street School's been bombed. Well, I used to pull my stockings down over my ankles to keep, you know, cool, being hot weather and in the kitchen. I said, where North Street School? I ran my stockings up, and all the way I ran home was about, I suppose, 10 minutes run, you know, running and puffing and dragging up my stockings. I thought, when I got in, the two kids were in there. There was one was about, I suppose, Lil was about 9, and the other one was about 7, 6 or 7. and they were all right, but there was 22 children killed in there.
Oh,
it was the bomb, and the school, it hit the first gangway going up, you know, near the wall, but had it hit the middle, it would have killed a lot of children there, but that was in the room that one of them was in, the older one of the two, and they both running up and down the stairs looking at each other.
Hmm.
One was in the infants' room, one was up in the big girls. That used
were you
to
the
be.
Eldest, actually, Miss Lang?
I was the eldest of the family, yes.
Were you? So you had responsibility for them, in a way.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, anyhow, there was 22 little ones killed there, and one little boy, I remember, he was ill for a long time. He was in the baby's class, he hit the baby's class, and he had bits of glass all over his body, so his mother told me, you know, where it had been. But the hole in the roof of the school wasn't much bigger than a large football. It must have been quite a small bomb.
Yeah.
But anyhow, they'd done enough damage there.
Mm.
And
that must have made them very anti-German round about.
Oh, it did. All they were there. And when that boat went down, when they...
Lusitania
went, yeah. Oh, it was shocking.
Yeah.
And it used to fill... You didn't dare say it, but for the German shops, there was a German baker's that... It was round by us when I was a child, you know, and he had been there all those years, and he was a real decent man. He had two daughters and his wife, and that, and we used to buy our bread there, and he helped no end of people. He was a real a good man, and see his things being thrown out of the window, you know, and his shop smashed up. And I nearly cried once. I thought it was a blooming shame and somebody turned on me. I shut my mouth quick because you couldn't sympathise with them. And then there was pork butchers in the high street, Poplar High Street. And they were others that were very good. And you'd get nice cheap things there and saveloys, peace pudding and faggots and other. And they smashed them all up too. They never came back. We never got the same again. Never had the same thing again.
Who did the smashing up? Who were
they? Oh, the people.
Just local people?
Oh, local people, yes. Mm. And people who must have known them, you know. And the Roman Catholic priest went into the baker's, I know, and I forget what it was he did. I think he stopped them at it, you know, they at his word, you know. But it was all smashed, all their stuff. I forget what it was he did now in there, but something he did, and held up his hand, you know, with baby's cradle, or what it was, with something. But I used to feel so sorry for them, you know, because it wasn't their fault. I mean, they'd been in there practically from birth, you might say.
Were you against the war, Miss Langston?
Yes.
Yeah, so you were a pacifist, really?
Pacifist, yes.
Yeah, so it must have made it difficult for you,
yes.
Really.
And I had a brother who was a conscientious objector, too.
Did you really? Mm.
And but they both went to sea, anyhow. But he appealed, this brother, and against it, and they gave him non-combatant service. He said, I don't want that. He said, I won't be a soldier. And he went to sea. They went to sea, and my other brother went to sea. Both boys went, you know. And, of course, one of them was only just 18. The other one was a bit older.
Yeah.
And they went on, and I worked for anything else exciting happened.
Mm.
Of course, there was another air raid. A few weeks afterwards, they went again to the city on a Saturday morning.
The planes,
but that didn't affect us to that way. No bombing in Poplar. Mm. There is a statue in the recreation ground in Poplar in memory of these children.
Sorry, yes.
Put up, and I know that there was an Italian, and his little boy had gone to school and was killed, and he was crying and wringing his hands. I can picture him now, you know, because I went round to have a look, never knows all round. And he was sobbing, and of course the Italians are that way more, aren't they? Anyhow, it was a pitiful sight, really.
But you were working at the welfare place,
yes.
Sylvia's place, all through
the war.
Then what did you do
and
at
then,
the end?
I was still there. 1919, I was still working there. And I went on holiday to Yarmouth, had an accident. And when I came back, I couldn't get back to work again. So she just closed it up just like that. It wasn't making any profits or anything. If it paid its way, they were lucky. And paid the wages, because the wages were very small. I mean, I never got more than £1 all through the war. But I wouldn't have gone on munitions, so I wouldn't have earned much more anyhow. Although they did get more money on the council, the County Council, they paid out, you know, extra increases and that. And they knocked them off after the war when they when the food began to get a bit more normal. They knocked it off, you know.
So you were the key person, really.
But
in,
I was
in
a railway street with the cooking and that.
Because without you, it couldn't run then.
Well, the restaurant wouldn't have gone on. I don't think so. In the market or someone better, I don't know. But you couldn't do much with it at all because you couldn't get the thing. Once they did send a summons about not having any coupons from there, and they wouldn't listen to me. And I went to Edgar Lansbury's, by Minnie Lansbury. I went to see Minnie about it, and she took it up for me. She said, you can't take coupons for offal. They said, what proof was it that it was offal? Well, she said that she hadn't got the coupons, and the girls hadn't got them. The girls got their own coupons, and they wouldn't give them up for it. So it had to be offal or nothing. And
What did you have there? You had two rooms with bars, did you? And they sat down and
they sat down, but they were all made into one. Where the three bars had been, that had all been taken down previously. I suppose it had been used for some other workshop or something. And the girls sat there on long tables. There's a picture in there of Sylvia at the table with the girls.
I see. How many people...
In her own place.
How many people came in?
Probably about 30 or 40.
I see. Girls at any one time.
Factory down. Oh, another thing happened there while I was there. A woman came in one day and she sat down and asked for a dinner. And we served her with a dinner and she had a baby in her arms. Oh, she said, would you want my baby? She said, I've left my bag, she said, up at Bromley Station. So, because she bangs a baby in my arms. I was there holding the baby, she never came back. So we phoned Sylvia and asked her what to do. She said, go to the police station. So down we trotted with the baby to the police station and they sent us the workhouse in Poplar High Street.
Did they?
That's where we left the baby. Baby was left at Poplar, so I never knew what happened after. The police came and questioned me and we never heard any more because we never saw the woman again.
So anyway, you had a big bar that held about 30 people.
30 people,
really.
Yes.
And then did you serve? Did you have waitresses? Or I mean,
oh no, the girls come up and got their own dinner. They came up and they served them out from
the bar. Was it?
Yes, they served them out from me.
Yes.
And
they pay fourpence or so for a two course.
Well, I don't know more than fourpence.
What do you do? Lunches and dinners, or what?
No, only just the dinners. Midday.
Just midday dinners.
From 12 till 2.
Yes, I see.
And then they had a cup of tea if they wanted it.
And what did you do with that building for the rest of the day then? It was a meeting place, was it?
Oh, well, we cleared up and it took us all the afternoon, so finishing up time. We left there about 4 o'clock and went home. And then I had Amelia's home, and of course we used to go to meetings again in the evening. Not every day, but if there was anything on, we used to go. And the demonstration from the dock gates, we used to go to the dock gates and line up there. And then march wherever she wanted you to go to. So we had quite a lot of marching about to do. And I remember one day, so a woman came up to me and she said, call me some nice name, and pulled me out of, just as we started off, you know, in the procession. I suppose we were going up to. It was in the evening time. So I've wondered since whether it was when Sylvia was doing her 6 months. Because she got now getting mixed up now with the dates. But anyhow, after I had this accident and we came home, I finished up with her for a time. And I was home for about 6 months, couldn't do anything because I fractured both shoulders, you see, collarbone, a big lorry. They said it was carrying so many tons, 6 tons of copper. Oh, I had on the certificate.
And you ran into it, didn't you?
Because I wouldn't have got anything at all, only it happened to be there were several of us at Yarmouth living in the same house, friends from the suffragettes. We'd all gone down. There were about 8 of us, I think, and gone to Yarmouth. And we had to walk along the canal and across the meadow to the house farm where we were staying. And this lorry, one of the girls was ill, and a couple of us went home with her. And as this lorry came along with three or four horses, I got up against the wall to get out of the way. The other side would have been the canal. Some of them would have been better, really, if I'd gone in the canal. They were walking that way, the canal side, and I was up against the wall, big brick wall. And as it went by, it pressed me against the wall like that. And you know the cog will. was horses and that stood out from the, you know, and the top, they always had a bit sticking out from the bottom. That caught me across here, and the others, the will caught me legs. Of course, I screamed blue murder. He looked round, he had goggles on, and back he went again. He had to go back the horses back to get me out. They took me to the hospital, some of the girls who were with, nobody else knew anything about it. And he wasn't much of a doctor anyhow. He said, oh, I used to work in Potter Hospital. He was a doctor in Potter Hospital, but he said, examine me a bit. And they weren't interested because I wasn't bringing up blood. And he said, go to the chemist and get some liniment and rub. I wouldn't let them touch me, rubbing. Anyhow, it had to heal itself up the best way it could. They knitted together whatever had happened. But the next day, I was indoors and sitting there, a picture of misery, and the doctor came in. He was attending a child who had, what was it now they get? They crippled him up.
Oh, rickets, you mean?
No.
Polio? No, not polio. TB?
No, it's, they lose the use of,
spastic?
No.
Not to worry, anyway.
Sleep is sickness, this sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
Anyhow, it's they don't get better. They're crippled up really always. I think what the devil is it now?
Anyway, you were very badly injured.
Roughly, you know, quite enough.
So did you get back to cooking then?
We knew a councillor was down there. About a councillor was down there, and I forget his name now in Poplar. And we weren't very keen on him. But anyhow, I didn't send him, but they told him. So he said, well, do you know the name of the firm? So the man had given us that, the name and the address. So I suppose he thought something would happen, I don't know, but he said, he got his name and address, he said, and then right through the firm, and he told us what to do, and the girls did it and wrote through, and of course I got a reply. And then when we came back home, Sylvia came along to see me, and she said, oh, I'll put it in the hands of my solicitor. And he lived up in the Strand, turning off Ludgate Hill, off Ludgate Hill. And this doctor, first of all, that was in the house with this child, he said, hello, he said, because being a crowd of girls there, they'd all been joking at the window when he came in, and he'd seen them all laughing and that. Hello, he said, what's the matter with you? What have you done to yourself? So I told him what had happened. Of course, he looked at this leg, he said, well, that's nearly burst, there's spurts of blood all over it. And he felt all around one shoulder, and like that. And then he felt, oh, he said, not both sides, surely. And then there was both collarbones, and it was fractured. he said, you go to the hospital, he said, as soon as you get back home. Of course, we came home on the Sunday night, and we got on a train, which took nearly 8 hours. Slow train from the station. Not a quick train at all. We went all round the longest way, you know, and it stopped here, there and everywhere. Finally got home about 8 o'clock at night, and I went to the hospital because they couldn't do anything much for me then. But Sylvia sent me to her doctor, and they had his report. And finally, I went to the solicitor two or three times, and then the doctor examined me for my case. Went and died in the meantime. So all the firm would offer, the firm came and offered me at home £15. £15, a girl was there, a Jewish girl, so she said, £15, she said. Of course she's not going to take £15, you can't offer more than that. She said, you've got to clear off out of it. I think I would have taken it because I just didn't care. And anyhow, this solicitor, he put it all forward and did it all, Sylvia's solicitor. Then in the end, he sent for me, and I went up to him, and he said that they'd offered £73, and they wouldn't pay out more. He said, mind you, he said, I'm telling you, he said, you would have got a lot more. He said, you should have got a lot more. He said, but the case wouldn't come up until it's somewhere in not Norwich, but somewhere up that way. He said, you've got to go there. He said, the doctor examined you for us, died. He said, therefore, he said, it's just chancy whether you'll get anything from them after all this time. It had gone on for a long time. So he said, my advice to you is to take it. So he said, that's up to you. So of course I took it. Well, the doctor examined me in Yarmouth, the first doctor who came in to see this child. He said, I said, how much do I owe you? You know, all of this. So he said, oh, nothing, he said, but if you get compensation, which you should do, he said, then he said, you can think about paying me. So, of course, I wrote when I got the money and told him, and he said 2 guineas. So I sent the 2 guineas along to him. So I had £71, and what did I pay? £71 in all. Well, I think I was out of work for about 8 months, so that didn't go very far. Yeah.
So what did you do when you started work again?
So,
Flexity.
What did I do then?
Did you go back to cooking?
Oh, after I finished up cooking, what did I do first? I don't know what I did.
Doesn't matter. Anyway, you eventually got back to cooking, did you?
I think, first of all, Sylvia had opened, they'd got a press.
Yeah.
Of their own, a gender press.
Yes.
The name, in White Office Court.
I don't know that.
They opened up a press of their own in White Office Court.
Oh, yeah.
And that was off the Strand. Or was it Ludgate Hill? I think it was off the Strand. They went down the very narrow White Office.
I think I know where that is.
There was all printers and all that all round. And went up 3 or 4 flights of stairs, and then she had the down floor with all the machinery in it. Proper press it was, proper printing press. And they used to do a lot of printing for other revolutionary pamphlets and all that sort of thing. And I worked there for about 6 months. I paid all right, I think I got £4 a week, I think I got
What were you doing? You were
printing,
were
And then I wanted, I was folding the papers.
Oh, yeah.
But I wouldn't say I was good at it, because it's what you've got to learn, really. And they used to get some girls in from one of, I suppose the union used to send them there. And then they said I'd have to join the union. But when I went to the union, they wouldn't take me because I hadn't been apprenticed to this printing job. So I was landed. And anyhow, she kept me on for a time, and then she suddenly disappeared from sight. Never told me anything what she was going to do. I suppose she wouldn't, but... Anyhow, Miss Smythe used to be up there quite a lot, and we used to go up in the evenings and fold the papers up there for nothing. We used to go up twice a week, 2 nights a week, and fold the papers and post a lot of them, the envelopes, and all addressed, you know. And
What were the papers? Dreadnoughts, were they? Or
Dreadnoughts, mostly dreadnoughts, yes. And we used to fold them on the 2 nights a week, and then they would put them in wrappers, and then they were sent off. And
so you had to leave that then, did you, when the trade union...
Well, Sylvia went to Russia. Went off to Russia. And old Corio, I call him old Corio, he's a man, I think he was a father of a boy, because she lived with him after a time. They lived at Woodford. But according to her, he was a very clever man, no doubt he was, but I didn't like him.
Didn't you really? Why didn't you like him?
I don't know, I just didn't like him. And no reason, particular reason. And I said something about she gone, and something I said to him, and he said, you've never been worth your money. He said, you've never earned your money since you've been here. I said, right. So I went and got my hat and coat and went off. So I told Miss Smythe. Miss Smythe said, you've no business of saying such a thing to you, she said. I said, well, anyhow, I said, that's that, I said. So. Then I went into a laundry receiving office for a while, but not for very long, about 3 or 4 months. And then I got the chance of going back on the council again in the cookery centre.
The same place you've been before?
No, not the school I went, not the first school I was in, that was the school that I'd been brought up in. But this was another school in Bow, near Bow Bridge, and one of the council schools. Then I stayed until the war broke out.
Did you really?
So the two teachers that were there, one laundry and one cookery. Cookery was downstairs, laundry was up. And they both went to Oxford, and I went with them with the children.
Well, that's connected up with what we started with.
Yes.
What tell me about Sylvia a bit. I mean, you knew Sylvia very well, didn't you, really?
Well, pretty well, yes.
Yes. What attracted you about her when you first saw her speaking, you know, out of the window? What impressed you? What really made you go indoors?
I think it was the thing she talked about, you know, and what she was like and sort of thing. Anyhow, she was a very likeable person. She,
was she?
And she always used to look so nice at that time, you know, that all the girls liked her, they all called her, you know. And nearly always spoke about her as Miss Pankhurst, but not behind her back, it was old Pank. You know what it is, that's shortened. And so, anyhow, she was very good, very kind person, you know. And
was she?
Anyone was in trouble. And they used to go to her and she'd help them out.
She helped you, of course, didn't she, with your accident?
She did, there. Yes, that's the sort of thing she did, you know.
Mm.
And, of course, as I say, Miss Smythe had them. I think Miss Smythe told me once that she said, I thought my father was very unfair. She said, the boy's got the most of his money and property, she said, and all the girls got, she said, it was 800 a year. Well, that must have meant a jolly good slice, wasn't it, at that time?
Mm.
Get 800 a year. So she had that much. And anyhow, before she left Sylvia, the lot had gone. But there's a picture in there, and that's where I didn't agree with Sylvia Knight, where she said, women in men's clothes, because Miss Smythe always, well, she had that mannish walk with her, you know, she used to walk along and stride along, really, not like we did Obble. And she used to wear a collar and tie, always very neat and tidy, and a shirt blouse. Well, we all used to, that was quite a fashion at one time, a blouse with a collar and a tie. I used to have it before ever I thought about the suffragettes.
Mm.
And she said that they're a mannish type, you know, and they're going about in men's clothing. Well, they didn't, none of them, any of them that I met ever wore trousers. I mean, they did have them. Well, that's why I think Old Smythe was the only one that really did wear a collar. She used to drive her own car, she had her own car, and she was more that type, you know, that. But she never
she's really masculine type.
But then. She was a nice, slight, good-looking.
Mm. Did they like her as well?
Yeah, they all liked her.
Mm.
And I know she came here, she said that her sister, she was broke pretty well, she said her sister was the, I don't know how you pronounce it, Comtesse or somewhere other, some Italian count she married. She was very wealthy.
Mm.
And she'd written to her, she was living in Italy, and she'd written to Nora Smythe and asked her to go out there. She'd got a job for her. And apparently this job was what the men really do, it was reporting.
Mm.
She'd been, it was reporting, you know, on all the doings that was there.
Mm.
And she sent me this is not going to start. She sent me a photograph of herself, sitting in a big circle, enclosed she was, pencil and paper on her, so I suppose she was really doing reporting and that.
Mm.
And her sister reported there to these people that she was as good as a man at anything. So, of course, she got the job, and that's where she was till the end of the war in Italy.
She stayed in Italy to the end of the First War. The
First World War.
I see. Then she came back again, didn't she?
And then she came back here again, and I didn't hear anything for a time, and I think it was after the last war, the Second World War, that she wrote, and I think that's when I saw Sylvia last.
I see, yes.
I hadn't seen Sylvia after, for a few years, and she went up on the general strike, because that was all before the Second World War. I get the two mixed up a bit.
Yes.
I just get a drink.
Yeah, do have a drink, yes, don't.
Except that I can't find a pen, so I hope you don't mind. She wrote back and she said, I don't mind, she said, I don't mind what you're writing. She said, when I read your letter, she said, I feel I'm there. I explained to her about a meeting that's up in Whitehall, you know, when there's a big demonstration up in Whitehall.
Mm.
A friend of mine, Miss Sylvia, with them, she took part in all of them. She always poked herself in, if it was Labour or what it was, you know, she used to get her cart out and banners and all go up there. And this friend of mine, she's an American now, Sylvia rushed into number 10, got inside the door, and old Daisy, she followed her. She followed Sylvia in number 10. They both come flying out very quickly. And I can picture the girl now standing there saying, why don't you let the woman go in there? She's not doing any harm. Leave the woman alone.
Did you go on any of these processions yourself across London?
Oh, yes, I used to go up with them. I used to go all the way from Poplar right up to Trafalgar Square at the end of times.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to Holloway one night. That was that wet, muddy night, I think, when the woman pulled me out. And up in the evening, Nora Smythe was driving her car round and round the prison. And they were all up there shouting, "Release Sylvia Pankhurst! Three cheers for Sylvia Pankhurst!" You know, of course we came back by train, but there was a shocking walk, all mud and slush, you know, and icy snow melting with the mud. And that.
You walked all the way on these processions,
did you? All the way on that
you?
One. We came home by train. Oh, we always came back on train. We didn't
walk
back. Oh, did
you? Yes.
No, we used to walk on them and that, and.
How did they organise them? Because they were very big processions. Did you have somebody?
It was all the branches, you see.
Yes.
All different branches. I spent it at Annie Bounds.
Yes.
I never knew her, but she must have known, I should think. Mm. Although I don't suppose even they did what we did, because we used to go with Sylvia pretty well anywhere she went, you know. And.
So you go with your branch, would
our
you?
Our branch used to go, and the other branches used to join up in separate paths, like Canning Town. People would come over to Poplar at the dock gates and start off on these demonstrations. And more or less, we were left, some of they got a bit hot, you know, and broken up. If they were extra, the police would break them up if they thought they were going to get a bit. But Sylvia was pacifist herself. She didn't believe it, although I read in that book there that she and Daisy Lansbury and another one went out and. They broke the windows on the bank in Bow Road. But I don't think Sylvia ever did much of that. No. She never did any smashing up.
But how did you take food with you when you went on these processions?
Oh, I mean, no.
You didn't eat anything?
Didn't, no. Well, we had our meal before we went, I suppose.
Hungry
when we came back, I suppose. And it was always, our food was ready for us in my house, you know, my mother.
Was it good fun? I mean, did you enjoy it? Going on these
processions. Well, we did really. I will say that we enjoyed it, you know, until they. Because I always cleared off when there was any fighting. I didn't get hurt any time. I did get my hat bashed about once. That was one of the worst ones. You'll read that in there. Because I don't know if this was. I think this was during the war. It must have been during the war. Or Sylvia organised a meeting for some reason or other. Might have been the rates or something. And they were going to march down this grove. Certain grove in led off Bow Road, and the railway was one side, about the Poplar and Bromley and Bow stations on the Broad Street. Well, the wall of the railway was this side, and rather nice houses this side, around the basement and the steps up and so on. And there was a good big procession because all the men used to join in as well, you know, lots of men with them. And they started to march down, then they were going to stand outside the councillor's house and hold a meeting. Well, the police were there in full force, and the bloke on the white horse nearly always led the procession, and when you did, you know you weren't going to get far. And when they got nearly to the bottom of the, what's the name of the grove? Well, I don't know about the name. It started. The police in the front turned round, the horses, charged the crowd, and the police at the back, you see at the other end of it, were nasty too. They did, they were nasty too. And they charged from the back. Well, everybody ran scattered all over the place. And I ran into a man, pulled me into it. We'd all lost one another. I was shouting out, "Where's my sister?" Because it was a pretty bad scramble. "I want my sister." I'm shouting out. The one who comes through here, she's another one, she was there with her friend. And a man pulled me inside the gate and shut the door, shut the gate too, leading up the steps, and there was quite a few people in there. They rushed into these gates because there was nowhere else to get away from them, because the police were slashing out. And the police come on the pavement and tried to open the gate and pull them out, but this man said something to him and leave him alone. The door kept the gate shut, and the old horse was looking how the horses go, over his head over the gate, and he's spitting out. And I remember I had a black velvet hat, and it was wired all around here with two big bows on the back. When I got out of the crowd, the hat was like that, and the bows were and when we all met finally up in Bow Road, I mean, they were picked up with one and the other of them, you know, the my crowds, I used to call them. They used to call them the Poplar Girls. We got in Bow Road all together and given their experiences, what had happened, or he hit me, or he did this, that, and the other. And We stood there killing ourselves laughing, trying to straighten the bent wire up in my head. It was the only good laugh out. We didn't get hurt, but I mean, I'm on the drums and the instruments. Poor bandsmen, I don't know how they got on, but they took them away and threw them over the embankment down onto the railway line. That was a silly thing to do too. But so they smashed the drum and that went over, you know, as they took them out of their hands and over they went. Flags and all sorts. I had a flag in my hand, a red flag, and that was pulled out of my hand before I got in the doorway.
Did you speak in the East London Federation, you know, when you were with Sylvia, did you speak at all?
I was almost too scared to. I don't think I could have done anyhow. I mean, Sylvia had it all at her fingertips, and they had some good speakers. It was Mrs. Walker. They've got there some in that book that he was he was a tram driver. Mm. The trams used to go along, was driving, you know, remember the big trams. I suppose you would remember, not anyhow.
I can imagine them. What did you do then, Miss Langsting, for the movement, for the women's movement then, yourself? I mean, did you sell papers?
Oh, we
you?
Sold papers, yes. We sold the dreadnoughts, and as I say, went out collecting. And we all supported Sylvia in any meeting she went to. She was that, you know. And the first turnout ever I went to was in Bone Baths after I'd met her there. And I was really terrified because I never imagined it like it. And they went after her to arrest her for something or other. And she was there, and evidently Daisy Lansbury was with her. And the meeting was going on, and all of a sudden the police rushed in, and all the chairs were slung about all over the place. And I rushed and got on the chair and stood up against the wall on the chair under the balcony. Was chairs being thrown off the balcony at the police? Was that they fought back with the police, especially the men. And Sylvia, she was on the platform speaking. She disappeared. They got her away safely out of it. And Daisy Lansbury was arrested in her place. They took her for Sylvia when they got to the station, police station. It was Daisy Lansbury. She was about the same size as Sylvia. And Sylvia got away that night. Well, she was all right, she wasn't ill then. But another time, when she'd been in prison out on cat and mouse license, she was very ill, and they took her, she wanted to speak in Victoria Park. There was a big demonstration and we all went up there. And this friend of this sister here, she got a terrific black eye. I don't know how she got it, but somebody had perhaps done it accidentally, I don't know, but that was a proper do then, and they took her off the stretcher. Yeah. The people took her in the park, to get in the park, on the stretcher, but the police took her away, stretcher and all, because she was in and out, you see. Yeah. Well, then this other time, she did 6 months. She was never forcibly fed. Yeah. Never fed. And neither did Mrs. Pankhurst and Christabel. I don't think she went to prison. I don't know. Yeah. Never knew much about them. Yeah. But according to this book, there was more. They came to the East End for a time, but I never knew anything about them until I had seen it in the papers. Yeah. And
did your sisters join? You had five sisters. Did they join?
Oh no,
the
only me two.
Just your two eldest ones.
The others were children.
I see. Yeah. Yes. Your sister did the same sort of things as you did.
She was the clerk. This one and the other one did the same as me.
I see.
The elder one.
Mm.
And cooking she did. She was, and after she finished up, she went as a cook in a school.
Mm.
And she was with me, and then from they moved her from me, and she went to, it had been a German convalescent home.
Mm.
It was in Hertfordshire.
Mm.
And she went there, and they were all maladjusted children.
I see, in Hertfordshire, was
all boys, yes.
Yeah.
And she went there, there was about 100 or more boys there.
Mm.
And she stayed there till the end of the war.
I see. Yeah.
And her friend, she was assistant cook. Mm. And her friend was cook there.
Mm.
Said they wouldn't pay my sister the money they were paying. They didn't pay me. We went away to work a 48-hour week, as we did in London. But we didn't work full-time. I only worked 30 hours when I was in London. I didn't want any more, did me.
Yeah.
And when the council wrote, they said that we would get, working a 48-hour week, would be a shilling an hour. And they all got increases during the... Oh, we were paid 12 or 6 a week for our board and lodging, food at board and lodging.
What, this is while you were working for the council?
Yeah, while we were away in the nursery
school. Oh, I see.
And we worked for that price all through the war. We never got another halfpenny. We
were That's the second war, is it?
Second World
Second War, yeah.
Second World War. We never got a penny more all during the time. Mm. We were working with women doing housework and lesser jobs than we were doing, and they were getting £4 a week and their food. Mm. We got £2.48. We made an awful pot of bed, but we didn't get anywhere. Well, the war ended up before it really got settled up.
What about your parents, your parents' attitude to Sylvia? Did they like you going with Sylvia?
Yeah, they didn't mind. My dad didn't mind. My mother didn't mind.
Mm.
She thought we wanted a job. Cause one time I went to church, after I came back from the Marshalls, from Watford, I went to church because he used to go to church and the wife and I used to go with them.
Oh, yeah.
It was him and he got me confirmed and all that.
Did he?
When I came home, I got all the kids christened at Edinburgh Christmas. Dad didn't know anything about that until afterwards. But my mother, she wasn't a non-believer. She was all right like that. And but they didn't try. No, they never interfered. I mean, we came in at night. We went out at night. We didn't tell them where we were going, but we were always in at a respectable time. They knew that and didn't trouble. We didn't trouble much about men, you know. I could have gone to Canada when I was about 19 and married, but I didn't want to.
Did your mother like Sylvia Pankhurst, and did she agree with her?
Yeah. She thought she was a good woman doing a good job, you know. Mm. She came to our place two or three times. She came round one night for me when she was very hard up. I don't know why she came to me, but asked me to go with her, and she went. I forget exactly where she went, but I know George Lansbury was the last one she called on. We went round to some different people that had been friends of hers and that had money. And she never got anything anyhow, but she wanted a ream. Would it be a ream of paper to print for the Dreadnought?
Mm.
She wanted a ream of paper, a polio that child had.
Oh, yes, polio.
Just come to me. She went there and she asked Lansbury, and there was a long, strong argument about it. And anyhow, he said what he said, I can let you have one ream, he said, and one ream only. He said, and that's that sort, he said, so don't come again for it. Well, she was very friendly with Lansbury. I mean, we're all the family to do them all.
Mm.
And I think they helped her a lot. But, of course, people haven't got money continually at that time.